This is the Astrology University podcast, helping you find inspiration, insight, and connection through the study of astrology. And I'm your host, Tony Howard.
Welcome to the Cosmic Eye, the Astrology University podcast, in which we will look at the month ahead and the challenges and opportunities that are coming. This is the podcast for the Pisces season. I am Alejo Lopez, your host, and today with me is Mark Jones. Mark is a writer, an astrologer, teacher, psychosynthesis therapist, and is working with clients and students throughout the world. Hi, Mark. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. So before we move into the Pisces season, I would like just to mention that if you like the podcast, the best thing you can do to support us is to share it with your friends and people who might be interested in it. And of course, we would also love to hear your feedback. If you have some thoughts or reflections, you can share them at help@astrologyuniversity.com. All right, so let's go navigate Pisces season. Let's see how you do it. So to introduce Pisces, I usually come up with a story about this monk who wanted to see the Buddha of compassion. And so he went into a mountain to meditate for 10 years. And he didn't see it. So when he was coming back to the village, he meets this young boy. And the boy tells him, oh, come on. Maybe if you would have waited one more day, you would have seen the Buddha of compassion. So he goes back to the cave and he meditates again for 10 more years. He doesn't see it. He comes back. He sees a middle-aged man. And the man says the same thing. Oh, come on. Maybe just one more day and you could have seen it. So he goes back to the cave. He doesn't see it. He comes back. He meets an old man, and the old man says the same. So he goes back to the cave another 10 years. He doesn't see it. And on the way back to the village, he meets this animal, this dog, who was hurt, was wounded. And in the wound, it was so old that it had some worms inside. So the monk quickly starts to heal the dog, but then he realizes that to heal the dog, he has to kill the worms. So basically, he wounds himself. And one by one, he takes all of the worms and put them on his own wound. And at that point, the Buddha of compassion shows up. And he says, only when you feel compassion for every human, for every living creature, you will escape from the wheel of incarnation. So I like this story because I think it reflects a lot this idea of compassion and love for the world. What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, I think that's a very profound story and a very profound moral lesson in the power of sacrifice and the power of dedication without immediate reward. You know, far too often the spiritual path or psychological spiritual growth is conceived of some linear path of achievement. You know, we're going to reach this towering mountaintop, or we're going to win, or now I'm interviewed by Oprah or on Sounds True or something. And actually, real growth often is accompanied in very difficult times of dedication, staying committed to something greater than yourself. People have a child or people have a difficult aspect to their job, but it's meaningful and they stay with it. And they stay with it regardless of cost. And then the other thing that strikes me, okay, the Buddhists are a little bit extreme on the compassion front. You know, can you love everything without having to cut yourself and invite the maggots into your room? But Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of compassion, it's sometimes represented in Buddhist teaching as a kind of snowfall or like white flower petals falling onto the world like gentle snow, you know? And it's like there is this pointing in that story to what I would call divine grace, that there is a presence in reality that can support people, that can support people's growth. And if you accept that sacred element of reality, you realize that though you're apparently alone a lot in life and you're apparently struggling, you realize that some greater aspect of reality itself is witnessing you. You know, that man in that story thought he was just alone with the wounded dog. Turns out the wounded dog is the Buddha of compassion. But that's pointing to me to the fact that reality itself is real. Reality itself is a real presence and perceived spiritually, you could say that reality itself always witnesses you. You are always seen. You are never truly alone, because Pisces often has a component of taking the risk to be alone in order to develop greater empathy, compassion, or sensitivity or insight, and not just be steered by the crowd or by commonplace conditioning or social dynamics. So you could say in this story, these stories often have this fabulous moment where the Buddha of Compassion reveals him or herself, like some action movie reveal scene, yeah? But I think the implication is because the Buddha of Compassion was there all along, and you didn't need X amount of time on the mountaintop. Reality is real, whether you've done 10 years or 20 years of meditation or not. Reality is real. It's just, when do you get it? Yeah, do you wake up to it being real?
Yeah, it's interesting because this monk actually, he sees the Buddha when he connects with reality, like you're saying, not when he's alone in the mountain, locked in his cave. It's like when he connects to reality, like you're saying, compassion is there. The spiritual realm is there in the real world. It's not
exactly
separated.
It's not a transcendent other realm that you have to journey like on some spaceship to get to. It is the actual inherent foundational reality of everything that we live in. And then you could say, you know, why are we talking about this with Pisces? Because there's very different kinds of Pisces, aren't there? And Pisces has this sort of perceived criticism as lacking in pragmatism or lacking in groundedness or being too idealistic or too soft. But that's why it's very important. Maybe Pisces has been like that at a certain point, but if the spiritual myths of a culture, if the spiritual stories that animate our life place God in some transcendent other realm that never interacts with this earth, then you're going to produce, if you like, a spiritual orientation that leads people away from the pragmatic, earthy day-to-day. But if you perceive an embodied sacred reality in the essence of food, sexuality, human love, the body, nature, if you perceive the reality of the presence as the inherent background of everything, all sentient life, as the Buddhists would put it, then you don't necessarily breed these ultra idealistic, ungrounded Pisces people, do you? You don't push people into that place. Sometimes I think that, you know, just spiritually inclined people, because it's very difficult to truly open to a greater reality, you know, you can't reinvent the wheel every time. You can't ignore every religion or every spiritual teaching. You're not just going to get there with nothing. You have to understand some of these great Buddhist stories or these great Buddhist monks or something. And so you're influenced by the culture that has helped prepare you to undertake the path.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where, to me, astrology is one of those teachings. Astrology teaches us, broadly speaking, that life is a full range, that life includes water signs and earth signs and air signs and fire signs. It includes mad Sagittarius people that rush off, you know, following some fiery inspiration, but it also includes grounded Taurians who, you know, value their stuff and want to stay put. And because astrology is a broad church, if you like, it's Catholic in the old school sense, the small sense, it includes everything.
Yeah.
And, astrology is a metaphor for spiritual reality, just like some of these spiritual tales are. And I think that was a perfect Pisces spiritual tale, beautifully chosen, genuinely profound teaching.
And I also, when you were saying this, I was thinking also perhaps to be spiritual is to be able to encompass all of reality, all of these realities, to be able to accept the whole circle, like you're saying, to be able to see the whole, it's not just the subtle realities, but also the grounded, the real, the driving forces, like you were talking about Sagittarius. Yes.
Exactly. Well, and is there, in the heart of Pisces at its absolute best, does the empathy of the final sign include this ability to feel into the reality of all the preceding signs? Mm. The best Pisces people are like a rainbow. The damaged Pisces people, or Pisces on a bad day, and I'm a Pisces, so I'm not being judgmental. On a bad day, right, I call it the Pisces puddle. You know, it's just a puddle of water. These people, we can't, you know, we struggle to get out of bed. We struggle to deal with things. There's this sensitive, messed up side of Pisces you could call the Pisces puddle. But I think you're pointing to what we could call the rainbow side of Pisces, which is that in the heart of Pisces is the ability to empathize with all the 11 preceding signs and have a little feel for what they represent. So at its best, Pisces can be a sort of integration point of everything that's come before.
Yeah, probably it's an ability because it's a mutable sign.
Yes.
Probably that's why it's a mutable
adaptable.
Sign.
Adaptable, exactly. Yes. And it's the final mutable sign.
Exactly.
It's the final adaptation. Yeah.
And it's mutable water. That water is probably the element that adapts the most. So it's like...
Because it can easily move its shape around the thing that makes the impression in the water. Yeah.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing this. So usually we choose a classical... Pisces, a famous Pisces, maybe not a classical Pisces, but a famous Pisces. And for this one, I was thinking of Quincy Jones, because I read a quote by him that he said, "I never really knew what it was like to have a mother. There's no question that that pushed me into a fantasy world. I used to sit for hours in the closet and just dream." So I think this connects a little bit with you were saying, like the wounded side of Pisces.
Yes. But also, does the wound lead to the vision itself? Is the wound a form of entry point or portal into another world, like those fairy tales where, you know, you have to journey, you have to sacrifice something, a finger, or that the boy comes back having been a swan in a different world and one of his arms is still a wing, even as he returns. You know, it's like you pay this price to enter the inner life, in a sense. And in there's also, I'd say, in the core of the human psychological movement, I mean, people have written books accusing Freud and Jung of what we're perceiving in Quincy Jones here, this sense of like their struggles, their personal illness or suffering leading to a greater psychological vision. And some people question whether they truly transcended their own illness. I certainly think you can raise that question against Freud, for me at least, more clearly than you can Jung. I think Jung clearly transcends something in a profound way in his later life. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's Quincy Jones's great gift. That loss led to him discovering the imaginative great gift that produced so much high quality music. And it's what's so interesting, I think. I watched this documentary on this. It's funny. Michael Jackson, after being in the Jackson 5, was really hungry, really dedicated, writing this amazing music, really, really empowered. And he hadn't found the right person to work with. And he worked with Quincy Jones, who almost blended himself to Michael's need and his need for to express the empowerment of the vision that he felt to truly break out. But people don't realize how much Quincy Jones was involved in making Thriller and various other music around that time. I mean, he literally brought his friends in who are musicians. He brought the total vision that just responded to everything Michael said. It's like that Pisces ability to just, you know, wrap around what's going on, mold or respond to what's happening. The best use of empathy to produce real rapport and creative results. I think it's fascinating, isn't it? I have reached a point, Alejo, where I am genuinely think certain wounds are there in life almost to break us through. Like they're both a real wound. Like there's real suffering in this world, obviously. But you know, when you really meditate deeply on your own childhood or things that have happened to me, for example, just in my personal life, struggles I've had, I realize what they gave me. I realize struggles I had in my family growing up, how psychically independent it made me to have gone through such overt struggle as a teenager.
Yes.
And that later in life, then I'm a less dependent person. And then to be an astrologer and a spiritually orientated psychotherapist and teacher, you don't want to be a very dependent person, do you? You know, I would never have been that person if I hadn't developed this very strong internal psychic independence that partly came through the wounding experiences of just being with people who didn't understand me or
empowered. The wounding experience, but also your kind of your approach to it, I don't want to say your work, but the way you embraced it, perhaps.
Exactly. Almost like an initiation. And I didn't even realize it fully at the time. I mean, these things are working on multiple levels at the same time. At the time, I was struggling, maybe upset by it, but I found my way. But years later, I see what finding my way in those circumstances has given to me. Mm-hmm. And it's tremendously enriching. And you could say that's a really fantastic model for thinking about Pisces. Can you find these private wounds? Can you find in how you've been hurt, even victimized, very Pisces thing in a way, or these areas of your life where you have to make tremendous sacrifice? Perhaps you work as a paramedic, or you just got a full-time job and kids or something. I mean, it's just heroic what people who have kids do who work as well. Like it's just stunning. Like people's regular lives are stunning. They're like heroic things. And I would say Pisces season, if you like, the deepest contemplation is to realize what is the meaning of the sacrifice I make in my life. From its original linguistic root, sacrifice comes from to make sacred. Mm-hmm. Sacra is the same root, to make sacred. Can we understand the value of our commitments and the sacrifices we make because of love, because we love our kids, because we are trying to help, you know, when the ambulance shows up, we're trying to help people, or our astrology, we're interested in astrology, you know, can it be more than just a private hobby? Can we use it to maybe have some self-knowledge or help the people around us gain some insight about their lives?
Yes. And I also agree with you, the idea that it's something you can do in everyday life. It doesn't have to be something grandiose. It could be, you could be having a mundane, normal, let's call it, job, and maybe you do it in a way of service, in a way of trying to make it sacred, like you're saying, make it important, make it have an impact in other people's life. I think also, like you were saying, heroic lives are everyday lives also. Sometimes, yes, I think we over imagine what it is to be a hero, what it is to save the world. And maybe it's just your world that you need to save, like your neighbor.
That's the single most profound thing. I mean, it's just incredible you just said that. And what strikes me is these fantasies and movies, if you watch movies and TV shows, particularly of any kind of fantasy type origin, but even thrillers after the Bourne movies and stuff, it's all just like almost like super people, you know, like the Marvel universe. There aren't, yes, ordinary heroes anymore in movies. There aren't ordinary regular people who would have been scared that someone's spying on them from a car and tried to work out what to do. No, these are all people specially trained or in some special FBI program with special powers, or they've come from the Marvel cinematic universe. And it, to me, it speaks of a sadness in the culture, the loss of the understanding of the heroism of the ordinary, that just to have people in your life, just to work hard, just to have kids, just to have family, just to have values, just to try and be a good person in the face of the struggle of being a human, is legitimate. That's a legitimate life. That's legitimate meaning. And I think we've lost lots of that. And you see a mental health crisis in young people. And you see that the imagination of the culture produces these ever more lurid heroes. Literally, yes. Thor is reincarnated, or Iron Man has a nuclear power center in his heart, or whatever. It's like this ridiculous over machismo version of heroism. Like you can literally just fly around the world like Superman did and save someone's life. Because we're disenchanted in some ways with, yes, the power of the ordinary. But yeah, actually, ordinary love is everything, isn't it? Ordinary love is heaven. Ordinary love is spiritual love. That, yes, is the point.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like an overcompensation. Because if we lack it, we need to overdo it in a grandiose way because we cannot connect it in like a more real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Great. So sometimes we usually we try to think of special things to do during Pisces, yes, season. Like, what is this season about? I think one of the things you said, I think it's interesting, the idea of thinking about sacrifices. What are the sacrifices I do? Why do I do the sacrifices? What do they mean to me? Is it really, am I really feeling it like making something sacred, or am I feeling like I'm giving away a part of me and I'm not making it sacred? Because like you said, sacrifice in our culture became more like a negative word and not so, exactly, much like a positive word.
It's a brilliant point, right? Human life without meaningful sacrifice is just a lesser life, right? In my view, if you're not making some bigger commitment somewhere in your life to beyond your own hedonistic impulses or selfish orientation, you just simply will not have as much happiness or as purpose as people who have a meaningful commitment in their lives. So sacrifice is actually really important. And in a way, what struck me when you were speaking there is people need to be more conscious of the sacrifices they're making and appreciate themselves for it. It's like when you become unconscious of it, it just starts to become a general burden in your life. Mm. Oh, God, I'm making the kids dinner again. I worked all day and my supervisor doesn't even think I did a good job. Blah, blah. You know, everything just, you have to remind yourself of the greater love. You have to consciously connect with the greater love for your family, for the meaning of your work. And if you can't do that at all, if you literally stare at your work and you see it's completely meaningless, well, then maybe you have to think about strategizing a change in your life.
Mm.
You know? And finding something that does speak to you on that level. Because I put it to people, one thing in Pisces season you could say it's a general truth, but it's a good time to contemplate it. There is no human life of any great meaning and fulfillment without some degree of sacrifice.
Yes. So an interesting thing could be, we also taking back this idea that we said at the beginning of Pisces being a mutable sign, maybe it's a good period of time to think about what you want to change to make your life more meaningful.
I love it. And actually, you're supported, aren't you? At the moment, Neptune's been in Pisces for a very long time. If you like the symbolism of your ultimate dream or the ultimate dream of the culture, Saturn's about to go there. Saturn's really racing through the last degrees of Aquarius, having spent nearly, you know, ages in 20-something Aquarius. It's suddenly going to hit Pisces very, very quickly in the spring. And Saturn going to early Pisces is very much like, act on your dreams. Mature Saturn. Saturn to me is always a sign of, like, can you mature? Can you grow up and accept your adult responsibilities? In Pisces, people get confused by that, but can you grow up by taking seriously an aspect of your ultimate dreams? You know, why should you just have to sacrifice all your dreams to grow up? You have to sacrifice some of them, you know, especially the more childish ones, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's not good to sacrifice all ultimate meaning. That produces robots. Saturn isn't about producing a robot army. Mm-hmm. Saturn's about true, mature adults. An increasingly rare phenomena in certain sections of the culture is actually, I would argue, and perhaps in some ways, harder to grow up right now. You know, there's an extended adolescence going on, an extended kind of. But Saturn in Pisces is very much about mature because you've committed to act on your ultimate dreams or your highest aspirations about yourself.
Yeah. And also, again, if we take back this idea of this Buddha of compassion being in the real world and the idea that the transcendental world is not outside of reality, but it's here. It's also, I think, this maturing of dreams. Like
you. Yes. Yes. Now that's a profound point. I mean, yes, you picked up the absolute bigger picture meaning. Yeah. Well, because it's all, if you think about the seeker idea, it's all distant. You have to get there. You have to travel many lands.
Mm.
The seeker by definition has not found. They have not found. If you find it, you realize it's there every day. This conversation with this, interesting person I've only met today, who seems to have quite a deep perspective on things, is alive right now. Yeah. Or, you know, my relationship with my wife or child, or the work I'm going to do, the people around the world that I'm going to speak to this afternoon and try and help with their life. This is it. This is all real. It's all intimate. It seems to me the greatest soul work happens when you realize the intimacy of reality. That your inner life and the choices you make day to day and the way you conduct yourself day to day really does matter.
Mm.
It's not in some abstract future when aliens come to Earth and you have to join the big heroic bunch and save the day. You know, it's now. It was never any other time than now. And your life is inherently meaningful and purposeful now. And if you're not feeling that, people, you know, astrology is an inspirational source of rediscovering it, I would argue, and maybe some of the community you meet around the world because of astrology. That's how it was for me when I was a young person, when I was in my 20s and really first studying astrology. It helped me connect with the great stories, the Buddhist teachings, psychology, but also interesting people around the world. You know, people need to know that they're not alone enough to take steps. And then when you take enough steps, you realize you were never alone. There is no alone. The dog was always the Buddha of compassion.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice, very good. Thank you. So Saturn goes into Pisces on the 18th of February.
Yeah.
I have 10:34 p.m., but this is GMT, so everybody is for a different timing. And then 2 days later, we have the new moon. And you were saying before we started recording, you said something very interesting, like, it might be a little bit of a glimpse of what it might feel when Saturn goes into Pisces, right?
Yes. You know, I was saying to you before we started that the danger with contemplating large scale astrological stuff is I don't want to literalize this. You know, there are 7 or 8 billion people on the planet. The idea that Saturn going into Pisces is going to impact all of these people in a very particular way is, I think, bordering on absurd. But you can extrapolate general principles. And if you're following the larger planetary cycles and trying to meditate on their meaning for your life, then a wonderful way of thinking about Saturn going into Pisces is, and this is even an exercise you could do, like a coaching exercise in a way, people could write down their biggest dreams, write down three of the most important, fundamental, biggest dreams you have about yourself or about life, and then spend some time contemplating how serious are these. Maybe one of them has to go because it wasn't, because the dream you had as a teenager that you were going to drive a Ferrari when you were 40 or something, maybe that's just wasn't that significant or whatever, or you were going to be a famous movie star. You have to look at those dreams, and the first stage of Saturn is to decide what to take seriously, because human beings can only work on so many things at the same time. You can only do really one or two serious things with your life at any given point. There's this fallacy of multitasking your life, but I think it's a fallacy. So Saturn asks you to decide what are the most important dreams. And then it asks you, what is the strategy that you could take to actually achieve something around that dream?
Nice. Yes. And Saturn will go into Pisces on the 11th of March? No, the 7th of March, right? Let me double check now. I'm confused.
I'll look it up now. So you could say in a way that the last days of Saturn in Aquarius going into Pisces are a great time for contemplating this. It's a great transition time. Yeah, it goes in on
the 7th.
7th into 8th of March, yeah.
Yes.
So it's happening whilst the sun's still in Pisces, and it's interesting because it's going to go in to Pisces whilst the sun's getting closer and closer to Neptune. So my point is perhaps even more intuitively valid, in the sense you could say Saturn goes into early Pisces. You could ask yourself the question, what of my dreams do I take seriously? Neptune's been in Pisces for a long time, the kind of sense of the power of people's dreams or the collective. And then the sun is going to that point of Neptune in the 7 or 8 days from the 7th of March to the 16th or whatever. It's a really nice period, that week or 10 days, to contemplate this process I'm suggesting that I might actually do myself. Frankly, I'm enamored of this idea now. I'm going to do this myself. Yeah.
And how do you feel about this? I always get this because Saturn conjoins the Neptune every year, of course.
At some point
he will meet him.
Yes.
And I always get this feeling, and I usually don't look at the ephemeris. I realized later that it's actually on this exact same period that I get this feeling. I start thinking a lot about things that I would like to forgive myself for, and maybe things that I've done that I feel like they were wrong, and I would like to ask other people to forgive me. And it always comes up. It tends to come up when Saturn is getting very close to the conjunction to Neptune. So I always, after I realized, I started to look at which day actually this is happening, and to choose that day to reflect on the things that I would like to be forgiven for. And sometimes it's me with myself, let's say, and sometimes it's to other people. How do you feel about that? Does it make sense?
It's a brilliant move. And what I feel is that I'm talking to a highly intuitive person who I didn't know. I swear to anyone listening, didn't know, half an hour ago, I did not know this person. You're clearly connected to something inside yourself, aren't you? Because it's a very, very powerful thing, because the unforgiven aspects will accumulate shame. It will become an infrastructure, like a coat hanger, to accumulate old coats of shame. And people get burdened down. People get to the point where they can't walk anymore because they got so much burden from past shame, past mistakes. They dig themselves deeper and deeper into past mistakes. I mean, this on an astrological symbolism level, it's perfect, isn't it? Saturn coming to Neptune, especially Saturn coming to Neptune in Pisces. I think the highest spiritual ideal alongside compassion of Pisces is forgiveness. And in A Course in Miracles, A Course in Miracles has this idea that the world is the world of perception, and then there is the real world, which can never be sullied in a way, right? This kind of spiritually real world. And it argues in that there is only one thing in the world of perception that leads you to the real world, and that thing is forgiveness. And you have to forgive so much until you realize there was nothing to forgive. You have to use it up. And that's why it says that forgiveness is ultimately unreal, but it's the only ultimately unreal thing that leads you to the real, because forgiveness will lead you to the place where you realize there was nothing to forgive. And that's very Saturn Neptune, isn't it? It's mysterious. People say astrology students are often tripped up by things like Saturn Neptune. How do we deal with the thing about boundaries and physical limits and time? Mm-hmm. How do we deal with that coming to the thing that is boundless, that is, you know, beyond time, maybe? Well, that's a mystery in life, isn't it? You deal with that by accepting a spiritual paradox that humans have contemplated for millennia. Astrology isn't going to become a simple route to escape life's complexity. We understand life's complexity, we realize Saturn coming to Neptune symbolizes that kind of complexity of how do we accept the eternal within time, or how do we accept the possibility of divine love when the world is so apparently full of suffering and struggle. But I think the process you're describing personally is phenomenal. I mean, that's a deep personal practice. I would argue that's a more powerful spiritual practice at this point in a grounded way, to examine regularly what you haven't forgiven yourself for and do your utmost to surrender that. That is a more powerful practice than going off and learning some Eastern religion or, you know, whatever necessarily at this point. That what we need is emotionally dynamic practices where people's grounded lives transform from that grounded vantage point of their life without having to go off to the mountaintop, without having to go and become a monk. That fantasy, that Pisces escapist fantasy, I'll go and join the monastery then. I'll go and do a 10-year retreat in the mountains. And I'm not decrying the people that have done those things. Some great spiritual teachers of the world emerged in the world because they did those kinds of things. But it's just not appropriate for the vast majority of people listening to this podcast. It's probably not appropriate for you and I. You know, how can we learn from the great spiritual traditions of the world without having to go and become monks or nuns?
And also without making it very too rational and too abstract.
Exactly. You were saying without this... studies or, just heart, feel it, embody it. Yeah.
And I think it's so hard. I think maybe it's because we are culturally inclined to think so much, but I think it's so hard. I think we get stuck in like reading more and more books. And again, we go back again to this idea, the dog was always there, just go.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, so you could say, couldn't you? And that's what astrology is to me. That story says something about your relationship with your chart. It seems to me, people listening to this podcast probably identify with this. You probably got into astrology because you're thinking, I would like a tool of self-knowledge. I would like to understand myself better. And I'm going to study this strange circular set of symbols so I can understand myself better. That's like the monk going off to the mountaintop. You know, because what are you trying to find in there? You're trying to find your soul in a way. I argue that astrology is like a boat that crosses a certain river or a certain sea to get you to a new land. And then the task is to live in the new land, not worry about the boat anymore. The natal chart is pointing you to your route to the Buddha of compassion, if you like. You know, it's pointing you to the things you might have to process or understand about yourself or contemplate on the path to the deeper acceptance of life that sees you perceive the meaning in every moment, or the compassion, or the meaning in every moment. So in a way, the story is almost like our relationship to astrology. We think we have to go off to some specialist monastery and study for 10 years to learn astrology. And astrology is complicated. You do probably have to put in some serious time studying it to really understand it. At the same time, what's all of the understanding for? Hopefully, it's to lead you back to greater enriched compassion, love, and meaning in yourself and in your life.
Yes.
But astrology can sometimes get lost and not do that. It suddenly becomes all about the scholarship, and it's another 10 years in, you know, the academic ivory tower of reading ancient astrology textbooks.
Yes.
And there's some specialized people for which that's an appropriate path. I'm not trying to knock people, But for the most people who come into astrology because they want to understand themselves emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, realize astrology can only take you so far. It only points you a certain way, and then the rest is your life. The whole point is to live your chart, not study it. Live it. Be it. I am a Pisces. I don't sit writing theoretical works about sun in Pisces. I live it. My wife's a Pisces. Two of the best men at my wedding are Pisces. The other was a Scorpio. It's like, live it. You learn enough astrology, unless you're going to become a teacher of it, learn enough astrology that it increases your ability to live, not so much that it decreases it or becomes a burden.
Yeah, I love that. Yes, and you know, I love that you use this image of creating a boat to navigate, because we were doing the we were giving a talk with Darby Costello about Saturn in Pisces, and what you were saying, the complexity of trying to explain, like, what is Saturn in Pisces? And she came up with this idea of Noah's Ark, the idea of flooding and building this ark to kind of protect your inner self, you know, contain, I would say, contain your inner self through this navigation, because Saturn eventually will come to Aries. And you, like you were saying, you will have to leave the boat and do things.
Exactly. Saturn in Aries exactly is the challenge to act. Saturn in Pisces, the challenge would be refine your dreams so that they actually are your real dreams. If you think about it, people have different stages of dreams. They have their false dreams. They have their youthful dreams. They have their everybody's going to love me and want to have sex with me dreams, or I drive this fancy car dream, or whatever. Yeah. Analyze and refine your dreams. Make sure that they're your real dreams. Like that phrase, be careful what you wish for. Mm. Make sure that what you're wishing for is actually what you want. You know, grow up through actually realizing your limitations. Saturn is always about limitation. And even when it comes to the ultimate dreams of your life, Neptune, Pisces, there are actually limits in a human life. You know, you will only love so many people. You will only write so many books. You'll only actually read so many books. You'll only listen to so much music. You'll only, let's say you're a musician, you'll only record so many albums, right? That's just finite. That doesn't matter who you are. That doesn't matter if you're the biggest band in the world. Yeah. You're only going to make so much. So have a think about Saturn in Pisces is the period of time to contemplate what do I really want the most authentically from my life? And to really refine that process so that the deeper stage of Saturn action at Saturn in Aries changes. Remember, though, you've already got Jupiter in Aries. Jupiter's already made the cycle change. So on a volitional, faith-based, vision-based level, you're already being led to the new action. So that's how complex astrology is. You can't just follow the Saturn cycle for manifestation. So we realize here that the Jupiter cycle's already gone into Aries. So you're meant to act on some of the refinement process already, but mainly in terms of understanding or where you're placing your faith or vision. It's a very good time period, isn't it? Jupiter in early Aries to start new projects. Then it's a good time, Saturn in Pisces, for those new projects to involve, as it were, your bucket list and refining it. So it's not someone else's bucket list. So you don't just Google bucket list, all the places you just 50 places, 50 destinations to see before you die. Yeah. Don't live someone else's life. Stop living someone else's life. You know, most of those places don't mean anything to you. Pick. So what most people do is they read a list like that. They have some vague holiday fantasy, and then they probably end up most of the time not going to any of those places. Right. The key is not to be presented it from outside, but to actually listen within. To spend some time learning the difference between that which truly emerges from within you, like a soul image. And then maybe there are sometimes, maybe it really is important for someone to go to the Himalayas or the beautiful islands of Greece. You know, maybe they're led there by something rather than just following the list. That's what I mean by refining your dream, actually learning to follow the threads of where the dream even emerges from. Don't just accept the fantasies that the culture came up for you.
There is, I think there is an aspect that's happening in February, which repeated itself this year. So on the 23rd of February, which is usually, I think, considered not so important, but to me, it caught my attention because it's going to be repeated three times. So Saturn, still in Aquarius, will semi-sextile Chiron in Aries. Yeah. So it's a semi-sextile, so people don't usually pay so much attention to it. But it's going to repeat itself in August and in November. So I'm feeling like, again, of course, we cannot generalize. It depends on your chart, and we should always see, like, in which houses it's falling. And
you mean a semi-square? You mean a semi-square?
Semi-square. From Aquarius to Aries. Yes. Semi-square, yes. And
And whilst Jupiter's conjoining Chiron and therefore...
Exactly.
Expanding that, yeah, insight. Yeah, I mean, one thing, just a broader point about Chiron. Chiron was discovered in early Taurus, so it's already in the last 27, 28 degrees before its discovery point. So it's gone into Aries. So this is Chiron in the culmination. It was discovered in 1977. So it has never done a full Chiron cycle since its discovery. So it's almost like our understanding of Chiron is coming into consciousness now because it's getting to the end of its first full cycle of observation by astrologers, if you like. Then the fact that you have that there emphasized by Jupiter, semi-square Saturn. Yeah, I mean, I think Chiron will be perceived to be of increasing importance. That's my sense. Purely synchronistically or serendipitously, a student of mine sent me a prep they're doing with another student on Chiron this morning. I haven't looked at it yet. They sent me the PowerPoint layout. My research is working on some intense Chiron material. I'm flagging that I think Chiron's going to come into a kind of astrological re-exploration in the last few years. I don't think we've caught the entire symbolism of it, apart from this wounded healer aspect. But to take that wounded healer aspect for a moment in this important semi-square, which I think you're right to identify as important, you know, what stands in people's way most of the time in their life? What have we hinted at right from the beginning? And your story has multiple explorations of the wound, not just the wound on the dog, the old wound, but even the wound of the person who keeps going and meditating for 10 years and not discovering the figure. Like, what's our greatest wounding? You know, realize, I would say, the vast majority of people are drawn to astrology because they've been wounded in a certain way, because a relationship, someone they really love, didn't work out, or an expectation or hope they had for themselves about their life didn't work out. They wanted something for themselves and it didn't happen, and they turned to astrology to study the fate or the outcomes or the shape of things in order to understand that. We come back to the very first point you made about Quincy Jones. It's a genius point. The wounding, the isolation in his family led him into the private world of imagination. Same thing happened to me in some ways, you know, reading books, reading Greek myths as a small boy, and then reading Tolkien and stuff, really very young, like Lord of the Rings when you're 10, and it takes you 6 weeks to read the book. And even that's good going. And, you know, you spend all this time completely moved by it. You spend a week thinking Gandalf has gone forever. You know, it changes you. It changes you. That's when I realized that the people that wrote books, even though they were dead, they were still living consciousnesses that I could interact with. They could still sustain you. It was a way of having friends that were not incarnate, if you like, friends from other times and places for an isolated child. I think you made the brilliant point. You know, our woundedness, although it hurts and it may require lots of attention and even hospitalization, psychically or whatever, not just physical, they are also great portals into our inner life. You know, what we're in a world where, you know, wars rage, where people want there to be so much more justice than there apparently is, hence all the superhero movies and the revenge movies and the so-and-so turns out to be a secret trained CIA operative and he takes all the bad guys down. Because people want that wish fulfillment. They feel the world's a dark and scary place and we need to get rid of these figures. But it's inside ourselves that work really takes place. The Saturn Aquarius going into Pisces work of identifying your real dreams, of identifying, you know, what was Saturn in Aquarius? Individuation, you could argue. Take mature yes. action to commit. You know, don't just think about astrology. Maybe make a commitment to do a certain amount of reading or studying or whatever else it is in your life. Saturn in Pisces, the refinement of the dreams. Saturn in late Aquarius, commit to your individuation. Semi-square Chiron in Aries. Because to the extent that you haven't been able to embrace your individuation, you won't be acting in some area of your life.
Mm-hmm.
People accumulate unconscious stress and then they don't act. They don't act not because they think it's not the right thing to do. They don't act because they're secretly much more wounded in that area than they like to admit to themselves.
Mm, yes.
So they put off the most important things.
Mm. So with the semi-square, just before Saturn yes. goes into Pisces,
yes.
might be a moment to reflect on this sense of exactly. isolation, woundedness.
Well, and where is your wound tripping you up? You will not be able to refine your truly deeper relationship to your own dreams and the manifestation of them unless you can define where you self-sabotage, you know.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Okay, so to mention it quickly, so on the 18th of February, the sun goes into Pisces. 20th of February, we have the new moon at 1 degree of Pisces. So maybe this would be important if you have a planet there at 1 degree of Pisces or... Do you use lunations also in oppositions if they have a planet in 1 degree of Virgo?
I think you can fourth harmonic it, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's even Sag, 1 degree Sag Gemini. I mean, that's going to be very close to my sun. So it's interesting itself.
Mm. Yeah. So that might be a kind of triggering all of these thoughts about what new dreams I want, what new sacrifice should I do, I want to do, these kinds of things.
Well, because recognize, right, to refine sacrifice, because people probably hear that word and think, why should I make any sacrifice? Remember, greater meaning in your life only comes if you live your life beyond purely personal selfish terms. Now, you could say Mark's bias, he's a Pisces, he's not an Aries or a Leo. But I'm telling you, it's a universal truth. If you're isolated, let's assume you're isolated, you have multi-millions, you can do whatever you want, you can fly everywhere on a private jet, you can, you know, play out any fantasy for yourself, you will soon and rapidly become unhappy. Mm-hmm. Look at rock stars, you know, having sex with attractive people, taking drugs, movie stars. Are they happy?
Mm.
Yeah. You know, it's like there is no happiness that doesn't involve some sacrifice to the greater life, either the greater body of humanity, individuals that you love, your family, or the greater religious and spiritual life, right?
Mm.
So knowing that, choose what your sacrifices are. Make it conscious. Choose them. Because the biggest burden of all is not sacrifice. It's unconscious sacrifice.
Exactly.
Sacrifices you don't even realize you're making. Yeah.
Yeah. It fills you with resentment then.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes, it's poison.
And it often becomes codependency, or you end up having sacrificed your life for your aging, difficult parent and having looked after them instead of done anything for yourself, or you sacrificed your life for your wife or your husband, and then you suddenly find out 10 years later when they're divorcing you that they didn't even really love you anyway.
Yeah.
Those are the things that need exploration. The things yes. that hold people back.
Nice. So then 23rd of February, we have the semi-square between Saturn and Chiron, which we talked yes. a little bit about.
Yes.
Then on the 7th of March, we have the full moon. And with the full moon, Saturn goes into Pisces. So I guess it's also kind of...
That's very interesting, isn't it? Timing, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of super
emphasizing. And Mercury right this. There too. Mercury right there too, yeah. What a lineup. Saturn, Mercury, Sun, Neptune, yeah.
Yes. So the full moon happens at 16 degrees of Pisces. And I don't know, I would say perhaps if you have something at 16 degrees of mutable signs, you're going to feel, you could attune to this and perhaps have some kind of revelation or insight.
That's my wife's Venus and my daughter's Neptune. My daughter's Neptune is my wife's Venus, yeah. I mean, nice. My daughter just, yeah, loves my wife. She tried to eat her hair the other day. My wife has extraordinarily long auburn hair. And my daughter tried to eat it. You know, Neptune right on the IC in my daughter's chart, right on my wife's Venus in the fourth. You know, this kind of like love bond, intense love bond. She can't get close enough to her sometimes. I think that what happens past a certain point? What's happened to me, to try and share something to your listeners? Because I've been living with astrology for so long, literally coming up 30 years, and at a relatively high level right from the beginning, because of a strange twist of circumstances in a way, i.e. people took me seriously as an astrologer long before I had the ability to deserve that, just because of the sort of artistic community I was in at the time, and no one else knew it, so everyone came to me about it, even though I'd only been learning it for like 3 months or something. I've seen so many charts, and I know so many charts inside my own head. I just know how often charts get aspected. Your natal chart will get lit up all the time, but that's what's so beautiful. It's like, I can seem cynical sometimes, like, I've heard it all before, the different transits, you know, they all go on at such a level. But it's not, it's because what I've realized is something is happening with your chart all the time. All the time. Yes, there are those once in a lifetime transits, you know, slow moving outer planets hit your sun or your angle for a year or two because of their slow motion. There are really big things that happen to people. But actually, your chart's lit up all the time, all the time. And that's because life is always significant. You don't have to feel it. You might be really bored or stuck in your life, and I'm sorry if you are, but life is always significant and your chart's always lighting up. And yes, I look at the fourth harmonic every time to answer your question. So if the new moon is at one Pisces, I look at one mutable, full stop, a degree or two either side even. Mm-hmm. So the chart's being lit up in fourth harmonic terms all the time to me. I read it by the crosses.
Mm-hmm.
I read it by its implicit structures. And then the later point at 16, you know, the full moon in March, 16 Pisces Virgo, obviously with a full moon, you're looking at the axis Pisces and Virgo because of the sun moon. But, mm-hmm. you know, I would also look at Gemini Sag, yeah, because mm-hmm. I'm just always thinking in fourth harmonic terms. I think that's the structural axis of astrology. I mean, supported by the trines around, but the key axis is the crosses.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
What would you think this full moon might, would you have any reflection on if you have a planet there?
Well, I don't have a short reflection. What is starting to happen is you're building up in the theosophical tradition. There were these series of significant full moons, and the Pisces full moon, basically the Aries, Taurus, Gemini moons that follow this Pisces moon in March are perceived in the theosophical tradition relating to the Buddha's birthday of the Wesak festival in May, a perception of the Buddha's birthday that's symbolic, to link back to your original story. For me, it's the last in the cycle but before the truly crucial moons, or not for me, for the theosophical tradition. So I think the Pisces full moon is a kind of culmination. What are full moons, right? They're elevated periods of 2 or 3 days where, if you like, the energies rise, just like the tides rise.
Mm.
So they're just great localized moments in your life for more intense psychic focus.
Mm.
And then this is the last one prior to the spring, you could say, in simpler terms, couldn't you? This is the last part of Persephone as the queen of the underworld, just before we get to the new life of spring. And those ones in April, May, June are perceived in the theosophical tradition as very significant full moons because of that spring energy, but because of its relationship to the symbolic birthday of the Buddha in May. It's all the same theme, isn't it? Well, you could say that a full moon is a kind of 2-day portal, let's say, to explore mm-hmm. your deeper psychic aspiration. It's a very good time. What is the symbol of the high tide, if you like, or the moon pulling at you? The bigger yeah. moon pulls at you. Literally, the emotions and psychic energy in you rise up. Mm. So it's a good time for very intense focus on your purpose or yeah. your true aspiration. So it fits in nicely with this theme of us talking about Neptune in Pisces, Saturn going into Pisces, the sun in Pisces, in this next month, this refinement of your purpose.
Nice. Yes. And I'm thinking also, when you think about Persephone, I'm thinking the idea of letting go of some things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, because that is our purpose here, it seems to me. Anyone who's passed their first Saturn return has started to accumulate a burden of dust, if you like old furniture.
Mm.
You know, we all the time, it's just layering up because we've been on this earth so long. You have to constantly move it away if you want to retain a sense of the deeper psychic life.
Nice, thank you. Okay, so we said, okay, Saturn goes into Pisces, and then on the 20th of March, Sun goes into Aries, and we will have another. We will talk also a little bit about the Sun conjoining Neptune, which is perfected on the 14th of March. And then on the 20th, Sun goes into Aries. Now, we need to kind of wrap up in a few minutes. Sometimes we have some dates for people who like to try to find kind of dates in which the energy is flowing more. So I found on the 18th of February, the Moon in Gemini will trine Saturn in Aquarius. So I think it may be also a good moment to... It's just when the Sun is going into Pisces. It might be kind of the beginning of this whole process that we're starting
I like it.
To talk about. And then, well, we took the idea of the 14th of March, Sun being conjunct of Neptune. We talked a little bit about that. And then on the 15th of March, if you're looking for more fire, the Moon in Sagittarius will trine Venus in Aries. So if you're fed up of reflecting and meditating and stuff.
Time to act, yeah.
You can use that day. Great. And sometimes also we like to give our listeners like a takeaway mantra or a phrase that they can keep to reflect on this.
Maybe this central idea in some ways there's been two, but the most pragmatic one, it seems to me, is that the heroic nature of the everyday, the extraordinary nature of ordinary reality, the magic of every day, right? This world is it. You know, your unique conscience or consciousness is it. How do you even reflect on yourself? What is the part of you even studying astrology? This is it. This is the birthplace. This is the world where that happens. And it's, I would argue, a sacred gift to you. So there isn't another place to go and do all this transformation. There isn't this place to find. Astrology is not going to lead you through some, you know, tombs in a Dan Brown novel under the Vatican to some secret place where someone hands you this globe and goes, this is it. This is enlightenment. This is the meaning of your life. There isn't an answer to the meaning of life. It isn't a question. It's not a formula. Life is the answer. Your experience is the answer. Your consciousness is the answer. Your life already is the answer. If you don't feel like that, then this whole thing we've been talking about what a great period this is to re-examine your dreams and what you really want for yourself, that shows how powerful it can be. Because I put it to you, we can't change everything. I think some people get a bit carried away with this create your own reality. There are limits in this world. Yeah. But at the same time, you can still do an awful lot more than most people realize to move your circumstance, to change things around, especially when it comes to just your personal experience of love. I'm not saying, you know, you're earning or becoming president or famous or something, but you can do an awful lot to change your experience of personal relationships and your bonds of care with people around you.
Yeah, I agree. Fantastic. Thank you. And then we also like to ask people, what are they reading? Are you reading anything in particular now? Are you interested?
There's that excellent Bruce Schofield book for the more serious astrologers, which is called The Nature of Astrology, History, Philosophy, and the Science of Self-Organizing Systems. That's a serious and heavy read, though, people. It's not just a kind of inspirational personal astrology book. The personally inspirational book I'm reading, I've read it many times. It's one of the very few books I've read multiple times. It's called Meditations on the Tarot. That was originally recorded by an anonymous writer, but it's actually Valentin Tomberg, who was a kind of student of Steiner's, who developed his own path and converted to Catholicism and created a kind of Catholic synthesis of visionary mystery teachings.
Wow, interesting. Now I'm reading The Creation of Patriarchy by Gerda Lerner, which is very anthropological, historical book. I don't know if it has anything to do with Pisces, but it's what I'm reading now.
Yes. Well, I mean, I have a small child, so I feel blessed that I get to read at all when I do get to read. Yeah.
Nice.
But I think, and I just got a book called that I'm very much looking forward to reading called Love Unveiled by A.H. Almas, which is the pen name of Hamid Ali, the founder of the Diamond Approach. He's an extraordinary visionary at his best, but Love Unveiled looks like a very readable, very accessible book on his experience of what love is. Yeah.
Great. So if people want to get in touch with you, what can they do? Or do you have any upcoming workshops or something?
Well, the key is just to look at the markjonesastrology.com website and go from there, really. I'm sure I'm doing a variety of teachings for Astrology University over the course of the year. My immediate things have been, just to say very briefly, I've been teaching over the last couple of years a spiritual psychology training course, psychosynthesis coaching training, after I got into the archive in Florence in 2012 of Roberto Assagioli, the founder of psychosynthesis, and I realized his huge relationship to astrology, amongst other things. And then I've been preparing what we call this turning point material, me and my researcher. So studying when artists and visionaries or key people have the single moment in their life that turned everything around, and looking at what's going on astrologically and what can we understand about the nature of transformation when we look at those kinds of things. I'm teaching a class in Beijing over the next 8 weeks on the lunar and planetary nodes.
Oh, nice.
But really, there's just loads on the site. There's loads of free stuff. There's loads of like courses. There's a foundational astrology course. There's a counseling skills for astrologers course. One of my great specializations is teaching as a former therapist and someone who still mentors and coaches people. I'm sharing with people useful skills for the consultation, you know, so because it's about more than just knowing astrology, isn't it? If you do readings for people, you have to actually communicate and reach those people, not just tell them about astrology.
Yeah, it's just also how you deliver. So the webpage is Mark Jones Astrology.
Yeah, markjonesastrology.com.
Okay, great.
Mark with a K, jonesastrology.com.
Thank you. Okay, great. Now for Academy of Astrology, if you're interested in 20th of February, it's going to start a course on predicting with progressions with Kelly Sartis. And then we have the second part of Saturn and the Core Goddess with Saffron Rossi on the 4th of March. And talking about Saturn in Pisces, the 18th of March, Lynn Bell will be doing a workshop on Saturn in Pisces. If you want to get in touch with me, my Instagram is liminalcosmos. My webpage is also liminalcosmos.com. I will be teaching a workshop on unexpected planets on the 4th of March for the Faculty of Astrological Studies. And then the Astrology of the Hero's Journey, we're talking about being heroic in everyday life. The Astrology of the Hero's Journey on the 30th of March. Okay, great. If you have any feedback, please email us at help@astrologyuniversity.com. And if you can share the podcast, that's fantastic. Mark, thank you so much. This was superb. Thank you for being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. You're a surprising person, it seems to me. Yeah, you personally brought a lot of depth and sensitivity to this. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. Study astrology online with some of the great astrologers of our time at www.astrologyuniversity.com, where we offer webinars, online classes, and virtual summits to bring you inspiration, connection, and insight through the study of astrology. Take good care, and we'll see you next time.